A very good morning to everyone. Thank you very much for joining. Hope everybody enjoys the new location and the wonderful spread that comes along with it. What did I do wrong?
No, you didn't do anything wrong. I just have tendonitis in my shoulder.
Okay. The topic for the... The topic for the new series is contemporary issues in halacha. The concept is that when you have book knowledge in any field, you then have to translate it to practical cases. I remember in fifth grade studying Talmud for the first time, and we were talking about when one ox gores another ox. And all the kids in the class like looked at each other. I don't know what gore means. I don't know what an ox is. And I don't know why we're learning this. But when you get older, you start finding out that those are what we call examples of case law. Examples of the original example. And then you have to translate it to your practical case. If there's an accident between two cars, who's going to be liable? What happens? You have cases, for example, in the Talmud, where one person is walking with an earthenware vessel, and another person is walking with a beam, and they're one behind the other. One of them walks too fast, or one of them makes a short stop, they smash into each other. Again, I never carried a beam on my shoulder. I didn't know what my Rebbe wanted. I didn't know what earthenware was. But that's the case of one person colliding with somebody else. And the Talmud gives an example that if it's Erev Shabbos, he had a right to be running. Because in a culture, in a Jewish neighborhood, it's a little bit more fast-paced the last few hours before Shabbos. And you have to translate that into other cultures, other times. If it's a more fast-paced situation, the guy might have been within his rights to have been speeding, whatever the speeding definition is, walking on the sidewalk. Whereas a different guy at a different time would be totally liable on a Tuesday afternoon. What are you running down the street?
Does this mean also that the other guy was liable, that he had to be more careful? He should have known to be more careful because it was Friday afternoon?
Yeah. So people are paying more attention. You're in a heightened state of alert because things are fast-paced. Mm-hmm. That doesn't allow everything, but if you're talking about little fluctuations, he was walking a little faster than one would expect. It's not faster than one would expect on Friday. Mm. You should see. I mean, right? Any house, you don't have to come to me to see it. Friday afternoon, it's like, you know, please move out of my way. I headed this to there, to there, to there. The job is not just to understand in the abstract the case law, but be able to apply it practical cases. The topic that I chose for this morning, for the first session, is Pidyon HaBen. Pidyon HaBen, in its classic case, highly conventional, very simple. A husband, wife, they got married, thank God, they're blessed with a child. Child is born. If it's a male child, then that child, when the child is past its 30th day, 31st day, you do the mitzvah called Pidyon HaBen, redemption of the firstborn. Simple mitzvah. You take a certain amount of value. It's calculated according to the value of silver. And you give it to the Kohen in exchange for this status of being redeemed. It's God's gift to the Kohen, so to speak. It reminds us, and this is why I chose it for this week, it reminds us about the time of redemption when God killed all the firstborn in Egypt and redeemed the Jewish people, and the firstborn of the Jews did not get killed. God's expression is, B'ni b'chori Yisrael, the Jewish people are my firstborn. Concept being that a firstborn is the most dear. You worked so hard, it finally blossoms, it finally has its its culmination, it's very dear to you. We have Bikurim, the first fruit, same concept. The first is special. And a person adds this dimension of thankfulness by redeeming the firstborn. That's the classic case. Now, you have all kinds of questions, again, in the classic case. What happens if the firstborn is a girl? So the rule is, it's only a firstborn male. What happens if there was a different child that the man had from before? The answer is, Peter Rechem, the one that opens the womb, it depends on the woman. It's dependent on her firstborn. So he could have had a marriage before, he could have 15 kids, second marriage, new woman, he has the opportunity to do a Pidyon HaBen. We're still in the realm of totally conventional. The sophisticated case, which I'd like to build to, is the case where the boy was not redeemed as a child, either because the father passed away, or the father was not observant, didn't get to it. What do we do on behalf of this child, and if and when is this child going to have his redemption?
Or if the father is not a Jew also, right?
Very good. In contemporary cases, unfortunately cases of intermarriage, what happens if the father, the biological father at least, is not Jewish and he ain't doing the mitzvah? So what happens with this child? What are the choices? What are the choices?
Can the mother do it?
You have a question. Can the mother do it? Can the grandfather do it? Can the community do it? Can the child do it? Child's 9 years old, 10 years old. Can he do it? What happens here? At what point does the redemption occur? Let's start, again, conventional, and then we'll be able to build to the sophisticated case. Number one, Kadesh li kol bachor, this week's parsha, sanctify to me every firstborn, the one who opens the womb. And that's how we know it depends on the mother's firstborn. The firstborn of your children you shall redeem. From 1 month you shall redeem. So the time is after 30 days have passed. The 31st day is the first opportunity. You shall redeem according to the value of 5 silver shkalim of the holy shekel.
There's a question about a C-section. So the firstborn is a C-section boy.
C-section, get it. Very next, good. Next didn't open the womb.
The next one is
oh, well, for goodness sakes, it opened it surgically.
That's no, it didn't go through the womb.
That's not, okay. Yotze Dofen, a C-section.
I mean, it certainly had to get open for the baby to come out.
Yeah, but that when we say opening the womb, we're not talking about, I mean, you could open the heart too. You could open anything. There's a conventional opening of the womb. There's a natural birth canal.
Okay, so natural opening.
The child had to open the womb. We're talking about conventional labor. We're not talking about pain now. We're not talking about recovery. Opening the womb in a natural way. So that's clear. C-section, Yotze Dofen, is not this mitzvah.
So the second child, and that one is natural?
Then it's already over.
It's over. It's too late now.
Yeah.
And even if the first was a C-section.
That's fine.
So because the first one didn't open the womb, then the second one did open the womb.
Okay.
So either it did or it didn't.
It's not today's topic. If C-section is important to you, you'll pick it as a topic.
I mean, really?
Okay. 5 silver shkalim of the holy shekel. How much is 5 silver shkalim of the holy shekel? So it's a certain amount of silver. The authorities working historically and trying to translate it into today's times transferred it into grams. The numbers vary from about 80 grams of silver till in excess of 100 grams of silver. And the contemporary way to observe this mitzvah The most common way is to get a hold of the, typically people get the peace silver dollar, the one that was minted after the First World War. It is 90% silver. And like this, if you have five of them, you know for a fact that you have the requisite amount of silver. Now, truthfully, you don't have to give silver to the Kohen. If you want, you can go online, find out how much 100 grams of silver, 90 grams of silver costs on that day. The price right now is about $16 an ounce. It's a little bit high for what's the fluctuation of silver. You go ahead and give him anything of value, tangible value. You give him a Staples workstation. I don't know if it's still in the box or you have to make it for him so that he is willing to go along with you. But you go ahead and give him that amount of value and you have your mitzvah. Likewise, nowadays the U.S. Mint is minting coins they call the Eagle Silver Dollar, which are basically 100% silver, pretty much. You would only need four of them to get the requisite amount of silver. Nevertheless, people enjoy using the Peace Silver Dollar, and it's like an experience. You run off to a coin dealer and you make sure to get them, because in the biblical time, the amount came out to be five silver shkalim. It was five coins. And therefore, we have like a heartwarming aspect to be able to give five coins. So the 90% silver coins, the right amount is the five coins. And that's typically what's done. You give the money to the Kohen. If he chooses on occasion, he's allowed to give it back. But essentially, it's his. And most of the time, he really is supposed to keep it so that the mitzvah is understood that you're handing him the value. I noticed subconsciously I keep motioning to Dan because he's a Kohen. I just realized after, like, subconsciously I'm doing it. Yeah.
Where's the Kohen? Where do you find this Kohen that you give the money to?
You choose a Kohen.
Any Kohen?
Any Kohen that has a respectable calculation as to why he's a Kohen. Guy walks in and says he's a Kohen. Personally, if I had to do a Pidyon HaBen, I don't know if I'd be ready to use him. But if he has, like, he can document that his father was a recognized Kohen, his grandfather was a recognized Kohen. We go through the, you know, a little bit of information, not just the guy who claims, you know, I'd like to make $70 today, I'll be a Kohen. The guy is a Kohen, so then that's fine.
So it could be one of your family members?
Yes.
No. Well, oh yeah, yes. In-law, I guess.
Yes, but if you are either a Kohen or a Levi, you being the parent, husband or the wife, then you're not obligated in this mitzvah. We'll see that in a few minutes.
Oh. Okay.
But if you had a family member like a brother-in-law, or however, you know, a close friend, you could certainly use them as your Kohen, 100%.
If the father's a Kohen, you don't have to do it?
If the father's a Kohen, there's no mitzvah to redeem. If the father's a Levi, there's no mitzvah to redeem. Both parents have to be Yisrael status in order to be obligated in the mitzvah.
Does the grandmother's matter?
That doesn't help you. Maternal grandmother, because then the status didn't... If the mother has the status of being a daughter of a Kohen or Levi, then she absolves the child without the redemption. Number two, actual Jewish law. There's a mitzvah for a man to redeem his son if the child is a firstborn to his mother. Again, the father may have many children besides. However, you know, first marriage, whatever. But if it's the mother's firstborn opening the womb, then there's an obligation with five silver sela'im. A sela is the same as a holy shekel. A holy shekel was like an upgrade, a double value of a shekel. In their times, they called that a sela. Kohanim and Leviim are not included in this obligation, nor are the daughters of Kohanim or Leviim. When they produce a child, they won't produce a child for this mitzvah. Okay, one final law that we need in the conventional. At the time of the redemption, the father says two blessings. One is al pidyon haben, to redeem the child, the son, as well as shehechiyanu. Some say to make a meal, recite a blessing on wine at the time of the pidyon, and this is to publicize the event. I put that last paragraph in not because we're learning all the laws of pidyon haben today, but because those are items that will change in our more sophisticated case dealing with an adult. Question?
The blessing being said at the moment or given.
You recite the blessing as with all mitzvahs before the mitzvah is done, and then you do the mitzvah. So you have your stack, you set the table. Uh-huh. The custom is you actually wash and begin the meal, and then you go ahead, recite the blessings, and transfer the coin to the Kohen. Good? Question?
I'll ask you.
Okay.
Yeah, so a daughter of a Kohen is saying, even if she's married to an Israeli, she still doesn't need to.
Correct. Correct.
But her son already needs to. If
right. It doesn't get passed down in lineage from daughters, because Jewishness gets passed by the mother, lineage gets passed by the father. But if that mother was the daughter of a Levi, then she still has she still has from her father, from the father's lineage, she absolves the child of redemption. Okay, now we're on to our topic. The case of an adult. Again, the classic case in traditional Jewish literature would be an orphan. Father died before he had a chance to redeem the child. Could be it was during pregnancy. It could be it was during the first 30 days of the child's life. It could be the father simply was ill until he died, and he never had a chance to do the redemption. Quote number three. If for whatever reason the father did not redeem the child, then the child is obligated to redeem himself. Now, that's an important piece of information, because you could have jumped on me right away and said, maybe it's the father's mitzvah, and if the father doesn't do it, there's nothing to talk about. Right? So that's an important piece of information. There is an obligation for the person to redeem themselves. Some say that they write on a silver necklace that he is not redeemed yet, so that he will know to redeem himself when he becomes a bar mitzvah.
Who does the writing?
The community takes care of it. At one point I thought jokingly, maybe they purposely have the silver necklace so heavy, made out
right.
of silver.
Weighing the right amount.
Weighing the right amount. But I don't think that's, I don't think that, I
that's
was wondering.
That's a lot for to hang on a baby.
Yeah, I don't think that's what they had in mind. But they do something so that he's wearing the equivalent of today's medical bracelet or something, something that will make sure that at a later date, he in fact goes ahead and redeems himself. Now, there's a classic question here. When we started, I mentioned there are a lot of options. Does the mother do it? Does the grandfather do it? Does the community do it? Maybe the child should do it. After all, we normally allow children to do mitzvahs. We encourage them to do mitzvahs. It's a mitzvah called chinuch, to educate the child. They shouldn't wake up on the 13th birthday by a boy, on the 12th birthday by a girl, and suddenly say, oh, wow, now I have to eat kosher. We train them. So why is this mitzvah different? Child by his 9th birthday, by his 10th birthday, why are we waiting till he's bar mitzvah to redeem himself?
Because she doesn't have responsibility for mitzvahs until he's bar mitzvah.
Good. Why doesn't he do it voluntarily?
It doesn't count.
Okay. Very good. Take a look at quote number 4. This is an eye-opener, the way he applies this. Even though we train a child to do mitzvahs by way of education, even before bar mitzvah, that is only by mitzvahs that can still be done after he's a bar mitzvah. Kosher. You eat kosher today when you're 10 years old, you can still do the mitzvah of kosher when you're 11 years old. You daven this morning, you put on tzitzis, you light Shabbos candles. Whatever you do, there'll still be another opportunity to do the same mitzvah in the future. The fact that you did it now doesn't take away from the future mitzvah, it probably enhances it because you're more adept. But by pidyon, if he does it before he's a bar mitzvah, he won't be able to do it as an adult. It will have been done. And he takes it a step further. He says, even in Chumash, when you study the life of Avraham, you wonder why Avraham didn't do Mila until he was commanded. Circumcision is the one mitzvah that Avraham didn't do. Our tradition is that he was observing all the mitzvahs because Avraham understood creation. He understood what impact each act of goodness has on creation. Charity, Shabbat, kosher. He was doing all kinds of different mitzvahs. Circumcision is the one mitzvah that would seem to be, if you're trying to create a holy nation, and your whole essence is trying to be holy, he would go ahead and do that mitzvah on his own, voluntarily. And what the Pischei Tshuva answers is it's the same logic as pidyon. You don't do a mitzvah voluntarily if you can wait and do it with its obligation in its full glory. You don't tell a child at 10 years old to redeem himself voluntarily if at 13 he'll have the true obligation and he'll be able to do the mitzvah for real. Avram, to do Mila voluntarily, is not like keeping Shabbat voluntarily. Because Shabbat will have another Shabbat, and whenever God decides to command him or his great-grandchildren, so we'll observe that Shabbat as an obligation. This Shabbat doesn't take anything away from that. But if you have a mitzvah that you can only do once, and once I do it, it's gone, so then doing voluntarily is not always the way to go.
I have a question. If a father is ill, as you said, and he recovers after the child is 30 days old, he should just do it as soon as he can?
Correct. Once the child's 30, so your 31st day and on, just do the mitzvah, earliest possibility. Our custom is we don't do the pidyon on Shabbos or Yom Tov because it's considered a transaction, it's considered business. But other than that, basically any day, you just choose a day. Yeah.
What about...
Earlier the better.
People who become religious later in life and they find out they were never redeemed.
That's our case.
Oh.
Hang in. Very good. Hang in there. Okay? Now there's one more challenge to this classic case. We're still on the classic. Where... the father didn't do it because he died. So we don't get the child to do it. That's quote number 4, because why get a child to do it if he can do it as an obligation later? You have other questions. Why don't you get the community to do it? The mother to do it? The grandfather to do it? Why don't you get someone else to do it? Quote number 5, the Taz follows this opinion of the necklace, the silver necklace, that no one does the redemption. Believe me, in a typical Jewish community, if the child needed 70 bucks to be redeemed, you put out a plate after Shachris and you'll have your $70. There's a reason we're not doing it. There's a reason we're fashioning a necklace instead, because we somehow don't feel we want to or are allowed to do the redemption on his behalf. Why not? Some say, quote number 5, that the community can redeem the child immediately instead of doing the silver necklace, but I disagree. I don't follow that. One cannot do a beneficial act on behalf of a minor, a child under bar mitzvah, if there is any detrimental angle to what you are doing. If there's a downside, then you can't do an act on someone's behalf. Let me back up. There's a Talmudic principle called Zachin la'adam shelo befanav. You're allowed to do a beneficial act for somebody, even if he doesn't know about it, even if he's not present. Bless you. If I think very highly of you, Yuri, which I do, and I see a silver dollar on the table, and I ask the rabbi, does anyone own it? No, everybody left, everybody's out of here. Whoever left it gave up. We asked, we tried to find the owner. Whatever we did, it's free for all now. I can go ahead, if it's free for all, no known owner, I can pick it up for myself and keep it, right? Or, according to the principle of Zachin la'adam shelo befanav, I'm allowed to do a beneficial act on someone's behalf, even without them knowing. I'm allowed to pick this up on behalf of Yuri. And it's his. And if I change my mind 2 minutes later...
You're not allowed to change your mind?
I can't. That's right. Theft. It's his. I'm holding it on his behalf. Okay?
You didn't tell anyone, though.
I'm sorry?
But you didn't tell anyone it was for him.
I decided when
he
I picked it up.
Himself.
I did the act of acquisition having him in mind.
And you can't change your mind?
It's binding, even if there were no witnesses. Witnesses would only be a matter of proving it. But I know in my heart what I did. I did it for him. It's his.
I have a question about that. When you're making tzedakah, so I mean, because I always felt the same way. If I write a check for tzedakah...
Writing a check is different.
Oh, really? Oh, because I thought that's a commitment, and then if something else comes around, and I'd rather give the check to that, and I haven't told anybody.
You have to ask Shaila what the status of a check is.
Oh, because I thought once it was written, then it belonged to them, even if they didn't know.
It's a nice behavior. It's not always accurate. Writing a check is not
always
binding.
Didn't you just
say
that on Shabbos about the guy who had his accountant wrote the wrong check to the tzedakah, and then he said...
Very good.
He asked him,
Very good, but you have to ask him.
Yeah, you have to ask him what he wants.
It's not binding.
Right.
I gave a case on Shabbos where a businessman who normally would make out like a $54 check to the yeshiva ended up sending in a check of like $1,500 and change. And so the rabbi called him up and, I'm just curious. I mean, thank you. It's like very generous of you, but like you never gave this type of money to our yeshiva. And what's it about? Guy looks at his checking account ledger and he sees that the secretary accidentally made out the accountant's fee to the yeshiva and the yeshiva's $54 to the accountant. So the rabbi had to ask, so what do you want me to do? That's not finders keepers. I mean, that's a mistake. I'm not allowed to just pocket it.
But he didn't write it with intent.
Correct.
My question.
This is a topic of its own.
Oh, okay.
Playing around with checks and mistakes, errors. Another case that goes into the same category we could do sometime is a person thought they were in danger, and therefore vowed enormous sum of money to tzedakah, and then finds out that they weren't in danger. It happened during World War II. A woman was fleeing from Nazi occupation, and she wasn't sure at that time the border was, did she get into Hungary yet? And she saw armed guards, and she thought that it's the Nazis, and she vowed the entire fortune to charity if she gets through this. And as she approached the guards, she found out that it was Hungarian soldiers who at that time were friendly. Until the tide turned a few years later. But at that moment, she was on friendly turf. Is she obligated in everything that she vowed? Or is that a neder betos, a mistake? She was acting on mistaken information. That's all a topic of its own.
I would think in her case that because she'd be in danger without her fortune, her life would be in danger. in the near future that she still needed it. That's, you know.
Good. Okay.
But, Rabbi, what, what's so detrimental about picking this
Let's get back to
because
time.
Because you found out later.
Good. Good.
You want some?
Good. No. So in this case, the concept of Zachin La'adam Shalom B'fanav would work. It's a merit. There's no downside. And even if there would be a downside, some small downside, but you're an adult, you're capable of making decisions, and to you it's very clear that there's only benefit over here. Good. A similar case, if your food has to be tithed, laws of agriculture in the land of Israel, I go ahead and I do an act that benefits you because you're too busy or whatever. I can do an act that benefits you. Zachin la'adam shalom b'fanav, I can cause benefit for you, not in your presence, without your awareness, and it's binding. What happens if there's a downside? You can't do that. I can't make business decisions on your behalf. You know, I think, Yuri, that it would be good for you to take $1,000 and invest it in silver. Even though silver right now is high, I think it's going up even higher. And with so many people needing to do a pidyon haben, lots of people are going to be getting silver. It's a good investment. So I go ahead, I find your checkbook, I write out a check for $1,000, and I leave in your living room, on the table, on the couch, and I leave you. I didn't steal money, I just went ahead and bought with your $1,000 silver, and I brought it to your house. A great business deal. That's absurd.
But can you?
There are
do
downsides.
That?
You can't make business decisions on someone else's behalf.
But can you invest this on Yuri's behalf?
Patience.
This.
It's his. I can't do anything. It's his. Unless I pick it up as a gift, which I'm the administrator or something like that. But other, I mean, it's his. It's his. I can't do it. If there's a downside, it's a business decision. I can't do it. Okay. The minute it has a detrimental angle, you analyze it from all the angles, it comes up that there's a downside, not allowed to do it anymore. Listen, to take away the child's mitzvah has an element of detriment to it. And such a beneficial act, even though it's good for him to be redeemed, but that doesn't work by a minor. So under the age of bar mitzvah, even if you do the calculation, and everybody does the calculation and says it's worth it to live a life from age 5 to 13 having been redeemed, rather than first redeem yourself at age 13, we all calculate that it's worth it. It still doesn't work, because there's a downside. And one could argue, and since he's not able to argue on his behalf, we, with our Talmudic analysis, have to come up with all the possible downsides and say, the kid might not want. He might rather do the mitzvah at his bar mitzvah. It's a nice ceremony. It has a certain ring to it. Bar mitzvah, pidyon haben, it's easier to get people to come. You know, the cousin from Alaska that wouldn't have come in, but if it's a pidyon haben, he'll come. So we want to do the mitzvah on the kid's behalf. We want to put out a plate and collect $70 to help redeem him. I'm very glad you guys want to do a mitzvah. The holy city of Cherry Hill. You guys are great guys. But you're not allowed to do that to him. Even if it's universally accepted that it's beneficial to be redeemed for all those years until he'll get to it himself, you still have no right to take away his mitzvah. He can't fend for himself. If there's a downside, not allowed to do it. In contrast, if the father was still alive but he was not doing the mitzvah, one could give of his own on the father's behalf to redeem the child. Because then the child's an adult. I'm sorry, the person you're doing the mitzvah on his behalf is an adult. And on behalf of an adult, to grab an adult's mitzvah if he's not doing it, even if there's a slight downside, but if the benefits outweigh the downside, you're allowed to do it. So if you have a father who's refusing to redeem his child, and we, in religious understanding, realize that it's beneficial to him and to the child for the child to get the mitzvah done, We're allowed to do the mitzvah on behalf of the father. The father has no right to say, maybe one day I'll be religious and I'll, you know, maybe.
Why not?
Because the situation, as we look at it now, it's considered a benefit. And at the time that we're judging on the case, it's considered a benefit. If he's already going to Torah Links classes, and we can assume that he's going to do this mitzvah in the near future, then you're right. You can't grab a mitzvah as he's growing into it. You can't grab a mitzvah away from a person. But if it's some abstract, you know, like maybe, so the benefits outweigh the downside. And by an adult, it's a business decision. Whatever makes more sense. There's so much here. You have to calculate. Give me a drop of room, okay?
Okay.
Okay, it'll come back to me. I'm sorry. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. If I was writing the rules, I say that...
They'd be much longer than they are.
Okay. But anyway, how it looks to me like it makes sense is that if the mitzvah only rightfully belongs to one of two people, either the father or...
Doesn't belong to the child yet.
Right. Or 13 years in the future to the child, and those two people can actually benefit from doing it themselves, then if during the first 13 years you decide you're doing it on behalf of the father, 13 years is a long time. He might not be in Torah Links classes, and you know, it might be 12 years from now before he does tshuva, but you're still taking the possibility and the lifetime opportunity, the once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, away from him to do this thing. And you don't know what's going to happen over the next 13 years. And the same way that you're willing to wait 13 years for the son to be old enough to grab his own mitzvah, if you wait that long, the father might do it too.
You mean the father did it after 13 years?
During the 13 years. The father might do it in 10 years.
Okay. Slowly. There's no proof from the child scenario to the father scenario. The child is being judged by when his mitzvah kicks in. Either you're allowed to take his mitzvah, or you're not allowed to take his mitzvah. And we're paskening, you're not allowed to take the child's mitzvah. You're not allowed. It could be 70 years. If bar mitzvah was at 70, which I know some parents would wish it was, but the kid would be mature by then, maybe. The logic has nothing to do with years. It has to do with whether it's his mitzvah or it's not his mitzvah. You're switching to a odds. And I don't... Right now, if someone's not doing the mitzvah, theoretically, someone else can do the mitzvah on their behalf to get the mitzvah done. We'll see more on it on the second side, okay?
I have a question.
Yeah.
What are the benefits? I don't know if you're going to cover this. What are the benefits of having a binyan event?
Or what's the downside of being without one when you need one?
Well, I mean,
that's the same question.
Do you want the legal answer or the spooky answer?
Both. We want everything, Rabbi Ryan. We want it all.
And all of it in 45 minutes. If I spoke to my wife this fast, she'd shoot me. Okay. With a jelly donut. The legal answer is that there's a mitzvah that needs to be performed. And this child is... whether he's obligated or it's supposed to be done on him, but it's legally correct to be performed. Imagine there was a child, a boy that didn't have circumcision. So you could shrug your shoulders and say, well, he's 1 year old. He has no obligations of his own. Who cares? But it's not who cares. For a child of the Jewish people not to be circumcised is mind-boggling.
It's a different status.
And the community takes care of it. It's a mitzvah that is not being taken care of. Needs to be taken care of. If you're a believer in mitzvahs, so legally it has to be taken care of.
Why don't they let him wait till 13?
The spooky answer is that there's this expression that something is owed. You owe a thank you to God. And if you don't thank, then in the spooky realm, if God forbid an accident happened to such a child, the attitude would be, aha. Like, that's why it happened. I'm not saying everybody always, terrible things happen, but there's an element of spookiness to it. Of you don't, if there's an obligation to give God 5 coins, by golly, if that's what he wants as my thank you, then let's get it done.
So he's not as protected, and he's
not as protected,
and
yeah.
A different status.
Yeah, to yeah. Okay. Fair enough.
And why is Briss different?
Okay. Yeah.
No, I was just saying that there was a someone in the community that he said that his sister's son. They were his first son was in a car accident. They didn't give a pigeon a bend. They all died except for the sister. So it's like you don't know, like
it's spooky.
What the deal is.
Yeah, we would never point fingers and say, you know, oh, that person who didn't redeem himself, right. You know, something, God forbid, Chas v'Shalom, is going to happen. We would never do that. I phrase it specifically after the fact. People are looking to attribute, to grapple with a tragedy. This is one of the things that they would take into account.
But I'm just trying to understand the last sentence about the father still alive, not doing the mitzvah. This is the assumption that it's in a from community. I think the case now we're talking about is like a non-from. Like, my parents didn't redeem me because they weren't from. So like, this is saying if the father just doesn't want to do it, then the community can do it. Is that what this sentence says? If the father was still alive but not doing the mitzvah, one could result. Maybe the community could do it because he's just like being stubborn and he doesn't want to do the mitzvah for some odd reason.
Well, it could be a variety of cases. Let's go through the chronology. Child is born. Father's alive. For whatever reason, the father does not redeem. He doesn't have money to redeem. He's stubborn. He doesn't know about the mitzvah. Whatever it is, he's not redeeming. But right now, the mitzvah is still his. The child is before the age of 13. The mitzvah still belongs to the father. If the community chooses to go ahead and redeem the child on behalf of the father, as a benefit for the father. So the Taz says, that I could hear. There's still what to argue about, but that is something that's workable. It could happen, because the person you're doing the mitzvah on his behalf is an adult, and if he would understand the value of the mitzvah, which we religiously claim we do, and that's why it's so important to us, if he would be tuned in to that religion, he would say, of course I want you to do the mitzvah.
But does he get credit? You
slowly,
do it?
Slowly. Imagine his neshama in heaven and his body is here. For 30 seconds, we separate the two. His neshama is screaming, my body doesn't understand the importance of this mitzvah. Please, do it on my behalf. The body is saying,
I don't know.
Kohen? $70? Why? Religion? Not me. Not since Bar Mitzvah. Right? An extreme example. So what do? If we know that it's to his benefit, then we do it for him. And that's it. I give you another example. This is what slipped my mind before. You have a woman who was married in a regular, solid marriage. Rabbi, witnesses, everything done meticulously. And now she's fooling around. They're separated. She's fooling around. What's her status?
She's an adulteress.
Yeah, she's committing adultery. It's forbidden relationships. It's very serious. Husband says, if I want, I could just turn my back on her and move on in life. But if I want, I could actually do her a favor and give her a get. Give her a Jewish divorce, and like this, she'll be a single woman who's fooling around instead of a married woman who's fooling around. Okay? But sometimes this woman is so far away religiously that if you called her into the court to give her the divorce, she'd never come. Or worse, she might actually say things that tell you that she doesn't want the divorce. What do you do? There's a principle called Zachin La'adam Shelo Bafanov. You can benefit a person if it's not in their presence. If they don't know, you can do them benefit. You go ahead, administer the get, and have the husband offer it, give it to somebody who will accept it on her behalf. Religiously, she's getting a gift a lot more than a silver dollar. She's becoming a single woman, and if she continues her behavior, you know, it's not nice behavior, but it's not horrendous behavior anymore. That's Zachin La'adam Shelo Bafanov. It's another example. Okay, you have a question?
Yeah, my question was, if you do the redemption on the father's behalf, so is it your mitzvah? Who gets the mitzvah credits? The father does? Like you gave
Very good
to
question.
Him?
Please wait for side two.
Oh, okay.
Where is that statement that you keep
Zachin
reading?
La'adam? Standard in the Talmud. If you need a specific source, I'll look it up. I mean, it's standard. It's a standard principle. Okay? Number six. When one redeems himself, the text of the blessing is changed. Instead of saying, pidyon of the child, you say, al pidyon habechor, regarding the redemption of the firstborn. Because he's not doing it on behalf of a child. He's doing it on behalf of himself. Now, before we turn over, just clarify. We need to extrapolate from this information of the orphan what would happen in the case where a person at age 30, let's say, finds out that there's a mitzvah called Pidyon HaBen and he was never redeemed. Right? So one thing is going to happen. We know that he himself has an obligation to redeem himself. Good. We know that the blessing is not going to be al pidyon haben, it's going to be al pidyon habechor. Regarding the meal, regarding publicity on the event, I use discretion, because that's not an intrinsic part of the mitzvah. And I wait for feedback. If the couple, if the husband, the person who has to redeem himself, would rather have a private event, he doesn't want to publicize that he grew up without doing this mitzvah, it has too many connotations to him, it would be insulting to his father, whatever, so then you do it quietly, private meal, whatever, with a kohen, and it's done. If, on the other hand, some people are very proud that they're finally getting to do the mitzvah, the orphan, for example, he has nothing to be ashamed of. You know, God forbid. That's what happened to him. So when he finally does the mitzvah, it's a grand bar mitzvah celebration. So that's something that we use discretion, but essentially the mitzvah has to be done. Yeah. Second bracha is made as well. Yes?
Can the meal be at the restaurant?
No. Whatever works. Whatever works.
But meal, it's part of this mitzvah, right? It cannot be just privately, you know, 10, 15 minutes, you know, say the blessing.
It could be done privately. The meal is not an intrinsic part.
It's like enhancing the
mitzvah. It's good. Well said. Fair enough. Enhancing the mitzvah.
Okay. He has to eat a meal, or he doesn't even have to eat a meal? The person is having it in.
He's supposed to participate in the meal.
So he, at least him, no one else has to come.
Well, then it's not publicity. I'm talking about the ideal mitzvah, and I'm pointing out how we scale it back.
So he could do a
ideal mitzvah to do it publicly with a meal, with festivity, excitement. It's a nice mitzvah. In practicality, if the person can't afford the meal or isn't interested or wants it private, so then you work with him. Because again, you have to know what's the intrinsic mitzvah and what are the enhancements. Just because all the trappings were done by everyone else's doesn't mean that that makes sense in this particular case. Essentially, he can hand over the 5 coins to the Kohen even without the bracha, and it works. If it's clear that it was done for Pidyon HaBen. You have to know what the mitzvah is. The mitzvah is transferring that value.
Okay. If the blessing can be pound and seder.
Yes.
Is a menu required for
a... It's not required. In the element of publicity, it's the correct, ideal, optimum way to do the mitzvah. Okay. Now, if you thought that that was cool, in terms of practical applications for today's generation, even more delicate is the case where the child doesn't even realize that he's obligated to do the mitzvah. I mentioned before that if the mother is the daughter of a Kohen, then the child does not get this mitzvah because daughter of a Kohen, her child is also absolved. Okay. However, the same way that a Kohen is limited in the people that he's allowed to marry, a woman who will translate firstly, just quick conversation, a woman who's a prostitute, for example, would not be able to marry a Kohen. A woman who hung out, who lived with a man who is forbidden to her, is not eligible to marry a Kohen. In practical terms, that means if a woman fooled around with a non-Jew in college, and then a few years later wants to marry a Kohen, can't.
She what lost. She did, she didn't know.
Okay. The same way that that's true, if a daughter of a Kohen lived with a non-Jewish man and then married a regular Yisrael, follow my genealogy, the child produced is going to think that he's absolved of the mitzvah of Pidyon HaBen because his maternal grandfather is a Kohen. But in reality, he's not, because his mother's status of kahuna was lost because she lived with a non-Jewish man. She no longer has the attributes of being a Kohen. She lost that status. Here's the problem. This woman has a child. The child thinks that he doesn't have to do the mitzvah of Pidyon HaBen. The child's father, the husband, thinks, we don't have to do Pidyon HaBen because I married the daughter of a Kohen. But that daughter of a Kohen lost her kahuna status because of her behavior, of who she lived with. And this child needs Pidyon HaBen. This becomes very delicate. Because the child knows that his grandfather is a Kohen, and the only way for the mother to get the child to do the mitzvah is to acknowledge to her husband or to the child that she fooled around in her college days, not just with anybody.
With Goyim.
With Goyim, with non-Jews. Okay? And if today she's a nice observant lady, and at that time she didn't know any better, whatever, she's very uncomfortable acknowledging this information to anyone. She knows the child needs a Pidyon HaBen. but she really doesn't want to divulge how she knows that the child needs a pidyon haben. What is she supposed to do? And the answer is, go to a rabbi. Because you don't want to divulge this information to anybody else.
But it
a rabbi who doesn't know you. Okay. Or keeps a confidence, we hope. Number 7. If the mother was the daughter of a Kohen and she lived with a non-Jew, her child is obligated in Pidyon because his mother was violated from Kahuna. Number 8. In our times, it's common to find that a woman may have been with a non-Jew, and if her father was a Kohen, well, she's losing her status of Kahuna through her relationship now with the non-Jew. Now, she may get married. The husband thinks that the firstborn does not require redemption because the mother is a daughter of a Kohen. In reality, she does not have the status of Kahuna, and the child does need redemption. This case was presented to me, this is Rav Moshe Sternbach talking, by a woman who is today very observant and is embarrassed to admit to her husband or to her son that she was at one point with a non-Jew. Presumably she told her husband before the marriage that she had been on the college scene doing what is done in some places, but apparently she never admitted that it was with a non-Jew. And the non-Jew, to a nice, from man, has a terrible stigma to it. And presumably she'd never acknowledge that. And therefore the husband doesn't realize that he has to do pidyon on the child.
That's only for a non-Jew if she was. If she was with a Jew?
If she was with a Jew, she does not lose her status of kahuna. Okay. It's not a proper behavior.
Right. Right.
But you don't lose your status. It's only when you're with somebody who's out of permissible relationships, even if they would get married legitimately. It wouldn't work. That's the type of case. Yeah.
Does the with refer to living with or
physical sexuality?
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. We're trying to be clean in wording, but at least once during the class we have to acknowledge what level of relationship we mean.
All right, I don't know if
yes.
Dating is
no.
wouldn't be a problem.
No.
Okay.
No. Intimacy. Yuri? Same question?
My
clarification.
Right.
Good. Good. This is going to clinch all the logic that we had until now. Now you'll appreciate building blocks in a Talmudic topic. If the child would still be before bar mitzvah, so the obligation is on the father. So she only has to divulge the information to her husband, which is not such a terrible stigma. So if she was willing to do, I would advise her to tell the husband she can't be sure if the boyfriend in college was Jewish or not, and he should redeem the child out of doubt just to make sure. It's a nice observant family today. If he hears that she's not quite sure, that would be enough for him to do the redemption and the child will be redeemed. Even though he's going to end up doing it without a blessing, without the bracha, and according to her information, which she knows, the guy was not Jewish. He really should be reciting the bracha. So the mitzvah is not being done exactly as it's supposed to be done. She would not be obligated to tell him the information definitively, because it would cause her enormous shame. And Rav Moshe Sternbach is willing to give up the bracha in order to save her the shame. We have a solution here. She could kind of fetch her way out of it, and the husband, being an ultra-religious guy, will spend the $70 to make sure that the child's redeemed for sure. But the case presented was that the child was already above bar mitzvah. The obligation is on the child, so giving this information to the father doesn't help anyone. He's like any other guy on the street. He can't do it on someone else's behalf. She is not prepared to tell the child that they were boyfriends, Jewish or non-Jewish, because now it's a regular religious home. What could be done is that someone can grant the necessary money as a gift to the child without the child knowing, a 14-year-old kid, then use that money to redeem him from the Kohen because it's an act that benefits the child. The pidyon would be effective with an E and will be the child's mitzvah.
Oh, so the father can still do it, but the child gets the mitzvah points, not the father.
If you do it exactly the way he described. Let's go slowly what he just described.
How do you take the money? You said you use the money. Someone gives a gift.
Imagine I had five of these. Okay? I hear about this child. I get a sponsor. Someone who decides to come up. Today's currency rates, $70. We pile the five coins in a row. I go ahead and I pick up these coins on behalf of the child in order to do his redemption. I pick them up. Who owns the coins now? The child. On his behalf in order to do the redemption.
Without telling him.
Like the whole thing with the
if you asked him, he would tell you, my grandfather's a Kohen, my mother's the daughter of a Kohen, what do you want from me? We know something you don't know. He doesn't want to hear it. She doesn't want to hear it. You pick up the coins, one act of benefit not in his presence, and then you give them to the Kohen. Another act of benefit for him, not in his presence. Had he known, nice religious boy, he would gladly give you, if he had the $70, he would gladly give you the $70 to do the mitzvah. If you can come up with the $70 to do the mitzvah and do it on his behalf with his money, it's the best of everything. You don't have to divulge. He doesn't have to know. She doesn't have to be shamed. He got the mitzvah because it's his money. How did he get the money? Zochen l'adam shelo b'fonav, an act of benefit. How did you get him redeemed? Another act of benefit.
So it was his mitzvah, even though he didn't know he did it.
Correct.
Okay.
He gets upstairs. That happens many times in life.
Imagine.
You get upstairs and you find out that by giving someone a smile, you lifted their spirits, and there are 10 mitzvahs that happened that day because of you. You get upstairs and they tell you, here's a list of mitzvahs that you were a catalyst for, and you say, I never even knew. Where is Wichita, Kansas? I didn't know I gave charity there.
And you get credit for all that?
You get credit, sure. You were influential. You were a catalyst. I mean, it's a different level of credit, whether you do it.
Well, this boy needs opinion of Ben, then he doesn't even know about it.
No problem.
It's like that Kevin Spacey movie.
In heaven, no, they know that he needs it.
You do mitzvahs for someone else, and then it kind of goes on, you don't know what's going to happen.
Okay. Here's the clincher. Furthermore, now that we've established such a principle of benefiting people who don't even know the mitzvah is being done, here's the million-dollar question. I wonder if this might be an opportunity for a person to do the mitzvah of pidyon haben, even if you don't have a firstborn son. There are countless people who do not redeem their sons. And one can redeem another adult as an act which is beneficial, even without the person knowing. I can go around, and especially when the price of silver is lower, so for $35, you could get the mitzvah of pidyon haben by saying, Craig Schwartz, who's a firstborn, he's now 19 years old, I presume, based on his parents and the rabbi claims that this is an outdated mitzvah, presumably his parents never did this mitzvah. I'd like to do the mitzvah on his behalf. Then, $35, I get a mitzvah on his behalf, and I go to the next guy. You know, I could just see, you go into the local Jewish newspaper, and you watch the births, and you keep track, and as soon as the kid strikes 13... so he's an adult, and suddenly you're allowed to do acts of benefit for him, even if there might be a slight downside. I could be doing mitzvahs all day long, pidyon habens, on people's behalf.
Then I have a question.
Yet, we never heard of people pursuing this approach. Never heard of such a thing. Why not?
Because?
Yeah.
When the child gets to be 13, so you go ahead and do it for him, but then when he gets to be 25, he becomes Baal Tshuva. He doesn't know that you ever did this for him, and he does it for himself.
And he might accidentally make a bracha levatolo, a blessing on the mitzvah.
But there wasn't a bracha then that made. It's still a bracha levatolo.
Recite a bracha, why not?
Oh, you did a bracha still?
Yeah, I'm doing it on his behalf.
Oh, okay.
I'm doing the mitzvah big time with the bracha.
Yeah.
It's an interesting possibility. Maybe you could send him a postcard in the mail to tell him that he was pigeoned.
Oh.
This is a very funny question. I want to tell you, this question, million-dollar question, it goes to the heart of how we relate to people who are non-observant. The prevalent attitude is, our job in life is not to save people from sin. Our job is to elevate them and bring them closer to Judaism. To, behind their back, go ahead and get him a pigeon for $35... I would rather knock on their door and ask them, would you like to do the mitzvah of mezuzah for $35? I'll help you. I'll get you a sponsored mezuzah. Build the people so that they end up doing mitzvahs. To save the world, save people from sin, all in the hidden, it's not really our agenda. Our agenda, again, is to elevate people, to teach people. People should go ahead and do the mitzvah. And while it's a million-dollar question, it's a brilliant question, and logically it seems to work. But I think that it's not a widespread agenda, not just because people don't realize it could be done, but because that's not really our agenda. We would rather pour the money into somehow elevating people, getting them to do the mitzvah. So again, I'll take questions if anybody wants, you know, leisurely right after, but synopsis. You have a basic mitzvah of pidyon haben. After the child is 30 days old, 31st day, you could do the pidyon. The conventional example would be the father does it. If the father can't do it, didn't want to do it, etc., the prevalent approach, call it custom, legalities, authorities, we don't do it on behalf of the child while he's pre-bar mitzvah. We don't even have the child do it on his own behalf, pre-bar mitzvah. We allow him to wait until he's bar mitzvah with whatever device we make sure, a necklace, make sure he doesn't forget. But when he's bar mitzvah, he can do his own mitzvah. However, there are cases where the child, for reasons of pressures that are upon us, cannot even be told himself that he needs to do a pidyon. Because to inform him that his mother was fooling around in college, take it or leave it, but it's not pleasant. So in such a case, we would go ahead, and in that case, we would lay out the money somehow. The father, the mother, a friend, the rabbi, the community, someone would lay out the money and acquire it on the child's behalf so that it is his mitzvah, which he unknowingly is doing, but it is for his benefit. And we go ahead and redeem him for his benefit, behind his back, so to speak, in order to make sure that the mitzvah gets done correctly, even though we're really not in a position to inform him about it.
And it has to be a male who redeems him behind his back? Or a woman can also do that?
No, anyone can. I mean, if you do the proper on his behalf, that's fine.
So even the mother can do that?
I believe so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Upon receiving the money, does the Kohen obligate, is the Kohen obligated to spend this money on religious items?
No. It's his. It's his money. And he's entitled to do whatever he wants. His personal money.
And in today's money, is it 35 or 70? Because I know in the little Midrash says it's actually $35, but you mentioned two numbers.
$35.
It's linked,
well, in today's money. Well,
it's linked to silver. I checked online this morning, $16 an ounce. So at $16 an ounce, it comes up, I think, to just about $70. If you wanted to do it in such coins. Mm-hmm. Now, you could choose to do it in a different method. There's a premium of $2.50 every time the United States mints it as a coin. So the price would actually be less. But we prefer to use currency. We prefer to use United States, you know, local currency. We prefer to do it as the five coins. It's like an emotional boost that it's the same number as the Torah. There are a whole lot of things that cause us to do that. So it ends up being that price. If a person wanted a cut, so you could just give him a bar of silver of the of 90 grams, and it would actually be a drop less in price. But once in a lifetime mitzvah, you know, we like to do it just right.
But it has to be a hot currency. It can't be a check written for...
A check doesn't work. That's the only type. That and real estate are the only examples that don't work for this transaction.
Even though real estate is tangible.
Yeah. Karka doesn't work. It has to be something handed over.
And a coin cannot, after the mitzvah performed, turn around and say, well, I'm giving it back. You know, I know.
He's allowed to give it back as long as the trend is that everyone understands that he's allowed to keep it. Because otherwise it becomes a joke. It becomes a ritual.
Right.
You know, hair, 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 hair. That doesn't work. It has to be understood that you're giving it. It's his. He's allowed to keep it.
But if he insists later, you know, giving back, yeah, there is no obligation not to take it back.
The custom was that they only gave it back when the family was poor or something like that. Sometimes he'll give it back because, you know, he doesn't need the money, whatever it is. But the encouragement rabbinically is that he should keep it in most cases. Like this, it becomes clear that I'm really giving. I'm really giving.
The father has to own the coins.
The father has to own the coins personally. It's his mitzvah. So if someone else sponsors them or gives them as a gift, they have coins that have been minted in Israel special for this mitzvah. So people give it as a gift item. It's a very expensive gift item because there's a whole premium. They give you certificates with it. That's fine, but you just got to make sure that it was given to you. If it showed up as a birthday present addressed to the child, it's not yours. You have to clarify that you acquire it, it's yours, and you can therefore do your mitzvah with it.
I was going to say that I think that the fact that you allow the child to wait until bar mitzvah before he does his own mitzvah speaks to the fact that we don't really believe the child's in danger. Because if we really did believe the child was in danger, we wouldn't allow that.